Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Play ball! It's 30 with Murdy with your host, Sweeney Murdy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back on this episode of 30 with Murdy, a conversation with Rohan Honda. It's not a name you know right now, but you might in the near future. Rohan is a left-handed pitcher out of Yale who is turning heads with the Mystic Schooners of the NECBL College Summer League this year. He's 6'3", 214 pounds, throws a mid-90s fastball and a slider that is already considered major league quality by some of the scouts I've spoken to. Now, none of that really makes Rohan unique, except that he has an interesting background. First of all, he's the son of Indian immigrants, just like me. Now, that's probably where the similarities end, since my slider never earned a high scouting grade, and I could wear platform shoes and carry around a pair of 20-pound dumbbells and still not tip 6'3", 214. But I gravitated towards baseball, albeit in a different capacity at a young age, and found it to be a bonding experience between cultures. Rohan shares some of that background. The only success pitchers from India have ever had in professional baseball, documented in the movie Million Dollar Arm. The two kids signed by the Pirates back in 2008 never made it far in the minor leagues, but the seed was planted in India, and it's actually part of Rohan's dream to see the sport grow there. His making the major leagues would be a giant first step in that direction. And again, scouts I've spoken with say he has a real good chance to be drafted in the higher rounds this year. The draft will be held in mid-July during All-Star Week. Rohan's story is also interesting because he was not a pro prospect entering Yale as a freshman, and when COVID shut down the last two Ivy League seasons, he didn't have a great body of work to showcase either. But he used the downtime to visit a place called Tread Athletics, and with adjustments to his training, mechanics, and everything else related to pitching, Rohan has become a legit draft prospect who has scouts ranging out to Connecticut to see him this summer. For a more in-depth look at one of the more unique draft prospects in my lifetime, here is my conversation with Rohan Honda. First of all, Rohan, I want to ask you, what's your experience been like with Mystic this summer and pitching in the college league, and how do you feel about it?
Obviously, when it comes to baseball for me, I haven't really pitched in a competitive game in 15 months. So playing summer baseball, I was looking very, very much forward to it. And as soon as the opportunity came about for Mystic, I want to say February or March, I couldn't let go of it. I've also heard great things about the town, and obviously it's showing now. I'm having the greatest time here, and I could not have enjoyed it anymore. So I've been making new friendships, just been working to get better and kind of just making new friends along the way. And obviously, I can't really thank the coaches enough for giving me this opportunity.
You had a little bit of Ivy League experience before everything was shut down. You hadn't pitched a whole lot there, but what do you feel about the level of competition you're facing right now in the NECBL?
Honestly, it's better than I expected. I would say that when it comes to the Cape Cod League, the NECBL, the Coastal Plains League, I think the NECBL is up there, in particular with the arms. We've seen a lot of really good arms around this league, and I do think that the competition is definitely elevated in comparison to the past years.
So when first of all, you didn't pitch a whole lot at Yale because of what happened the last 2 years. So you have a few innings there, but when you went to Yale to play baseball and study, what were your expectations for your baseball career? What were you thinking was going to happen?
Yeah, at the time when I entered Yale, I wasn't necessarily too realistic with how I was as a pitcher. I thought I was okay. I thought I could get the job done, and nothing really too far beyond that. There would be moments of inconsistencies throughout the fall and winter where I would kind of get exposed a little bit at Yale, because I think to succeed in anything, I think you need to have a set routine and be very disciplined in regards to what you're trying to get done. And that Yale was honestly just for me to get outs. But before that, it wasn't necessarily anything else. I wasn't working on anything mechanically. Yes, I was trying to get stronger, but that's only a small part of the process. So at Yale, it was tough to really like learn, because I did not get the, I was not smart enough at the time to know myself better. And I think when COVID kind of came and hit us out of nowhere, I was able to really self-reflect and learn a lot about myself and really move forward. But this is something that I think is more like on a personal level. You don't really tend to see this from other players. Players tend to figure it out going into college. I think for me, I was still trying to learn a lot.
I think there's probably still a big group of people that, you know, kind of find themselves in college and find their way along. But you're moving into a position now where people are very excited about the upcoming draft and your potential there. Was that a thought process for you as you were entering Yale?
It definitely was. And knowing where I was at the time, I wasn't even close to where I am now. I would honestly say I kind of degressed a little bit when it comes to velocity when I was there. If simply in that cold weather, no routine, you're going to get exposed. Your arm's going to get exposed. Health-wise, it's just not the greatest thing for you. So, yes, that was an expectation, get drafted. I think when we all go to even in an Ivy League school, I think when we all have the same ambitions, I think it's very, very good to have that sort of goal of getting drafted and trying to play professional baseball.
Well, the shutdown kind of helped you figure things out because you're able to focus on the coaching aspect of it as opposed to the competition level of it, and it got you to a different place. How and when did you get hooked up with Tread Athletics, and what did they do for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say around early May was when I started gauging interest with Tread Athletics.
Of 2020.
My brother at the time actually started a couple weeks earlier, and I was kind of just learning from him, seeing what he was going through. And I saw how detailed their process was, so I figured I might as well join in on this as well. And this was something I decided my brother and I decided to go all in. Like, this was all in that we needed to go on, because we both know that there was so much we needed to work on, and this was the right group of people to help us figure it out. And when it comes to the development side of things, there were so many things that I needed to work on. In particular, it was more of my arm action. I kind of shot put at the ball. It sounds crazy when I say it, but if you look back at past videos, it's true. My arm was not in a great position to where I was able to like actually gain some leverage at all. So I would definitely be working a lot on the arm action, but then also on the mobility side of things. Tread usually has an assessment that make every player do, and I want to say it's like 40 to 45 categories when it comes to the mobility side of things, and they are so pinpoint into what they want you to test out. So obviously I took that assessment, and there were a lot of things that we could pinpoint that needed to be better. So obviously I got better in those aspects as well. And then the strength aspect, which is something I feel like I've been doing okay. I was able to get along with Tread in that aspect as well. So I would say it's honestly a combination of a lot of things. I can't really pinpoint one thing just because that's how much I needed to work on my body. And thank God I did that, because I would say it's definitely been game-changing. But I will say I will give credit to another place as well that I usually that I went to from August till November. It's actually a place called Dynamic Sports Training based out of Houston, Texas, started by Kevin Poppy and Hayden Letts. I went there more particularly for the lifting aspect, just because I felt like there was a program there for me where I was able to get stronger at a quicker amount of time. I feel like once I was able to achieve that, then I think I could work a lot more on making my body in particular move a lot faster, which helps with, I guess, consistency in pitching. So I stayed with a couple of teammates from August to November, and I would say that was a really good experience just to be with teammates again. I mean, it was too long already at the time, but I'll definitely give some credit as well into my development.
All right, so I have you listed as 6'3", 214. What's how accurate is that, and where have you gone, say, like in the last 2 years, maybe 18 months, how much have you gained strength-wise?
So height's obviously the same, but the weight, I went from 225 to around 210, at least when I was in Houston. I got a little bit higher just to gain a little bit more of that muscle mass. On a consistency basis, I try to be in between 212 and 214 every day.
Wow.
And that's something that I've really honed in on, because that's where I feel like I'm the best. I feel like the best. That's where I think I got to the point where I knew my body at certain weights and what feels good, what doesn't. And I finally figured out, like, this is the ideal ideal spot to be in. And then in the strength aspect, I think it was a lot of single leg stuff that I really worked on. A lot of lunges, Bulgarian split squats. They sound horrible, but they help so much. The torture is still there, but it's worth it in the long run. I think that people need to embrace it a little bit more. And I would definitely say that the obviously upper body got a lot better. I was able to like actually leverage my upper body really well on certain lifts. But I would definitely say that some of the single leg stuff that we did in particular in Houston was absolutely game changing.
All right. So your fastball's mid-90s, but your slider has gotten a lot of attention from people. John Stuper is your college coach, former big league pitcher. I actually remember seeing him pitch for the Cardinals in the World Series when I was younger. And a famous hit that he gave up to Pete Rose, a highlight hit that he gave up to Pete Rose along the way. You've probably heard some of those stories, but what are some of the things that he and the others helped you, especially in the development with your slider?
As soon as I got to college, Coach Stuper was really honing in on trying to develop the slider. This was something that was very new to me because I threw a pretty crappy curveball at the time. So it was good to know that there was another option out there. It was definitely a struggle at first because it was just more of like a feel aspect. I wasn't really understanding what I was getting myself into at the time. There would be certain days would be really good, certain days what I would absolutely struggle with it. And I think the thing that's been game changing now in comparison to the past was that it's consistent. I have to feel for it now to where I can throw it wherever I want at whatever count. And I think that's the most ideal situation to be in when it comes to throwing any particular off-speed pitch. So yeah, Stuper definitely helping when it comes to starting that out. And I think it was getting more and more consistent, even going into the sophomore year of 2020. But once COVID hit, it was obviously about gaining velocity, but it was also about improving your repertoire. So yeah, I worked with a pitch design guy there at Tread. His name is Tyler Zombro. And he helps me a lot when it comes to the off-speed pitches. Slider was like 75, 78 at the time when I was working with him. Not ideal. Ideal if you want to be some sort of prospect. So we worked a lot on the slider, worked a lot on possibly different grips, different ways of feeling it, different ways of cueing it. I do think that every pitch that you throw, some sort of like, if you have one particular cue that will help you be consistent, just hone in on that. Don't overthink it. Make it simple for yourself. The slider's definitely been a game changer as of late. I think I want to say 2 days ago when I pitched, that was probably the best it's actually ever been. And I do think that there was a new particular feel that I had there that I didn't really have in the past, to where I can definitely use it in future outings.
Splitter and change, I have read a part of your repertoire. I've heard people talk more about your fastball and slider. Where do you consider your split and change right now, and your usage and things like that?
That's a good question. I would say that for the splitter and the changeup in particular, so my full repertoire at the moment right now, which is what I possibly use the most. So I use a two-seam action right now when it comes to the fastball. I throw a slider, but then I've also been throwing this cutter as of late. This is something I started if I were to start, have any sort of long outings. I figured a cutter has been a pitch where I feel like I've been able to gain some feel of at a very quick amount of time. And once I was able to gain the feel of that, just in a week, I was able to be at least making a difference compared to the slider. And this is not more of an out pitch at all. This is more of missing barrels. But that's definitely, that's another pitch that I've also added to the repertoire. But in regards to the splitter and changeup, I used to throw a changeup at the time. And back when I was working with the pitch design guy at Tread, we actually let go of the changeup and started working on the splitter. Just because my changeup was like very similar to my fastball. But I do think I have been working a little bit with the changeup again, just to, I do feel like when it comes to in the future and like where I'm going to be at, if I do want to, if I am a starter in the future, I do think I'm going to change up away from really figuring out my repertoire. I do think the splitter, I do need to use more often, but when it's on, it's just another level as well. But for the splitter, for me, it's more mental. It's such an interesting and intriguing pitch out there that where it's just all mental. It's all mental. So I think it's just putting more reps out there with the splitter, and especially with the changeup, and just trying to use it more in game-like situations.
Ron, are you finding the difference between, you know, the pitch lab stuff and actual game competition stuff as you've gone through this summer? Are you finding, you know, the maybe some of the subtle and more overt differences in the two aspects?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I was training and throwing live at-bats at Tread, it would be with a TrackMan. It would be with a radar gun behind, and I would know the numbers that are coming. In games, you don't know any of that.
Yeah.
And I think the very first outing itself was probably the best I ever felt when it comes to before a start. And the first thing I really wanted to know what my velo was. And then I told myself, you just can't. You got to go pitch. You've got to go pitch. There is a difference now. These games really matter. There are people here to see you, and you've got to prove that you can pitch because the numbers are there. The velo numbers are there. Now it's just backing it up with some sort of repertoire and then getting out to along the way.
So what's it like to explain to people, and all your teammates are in the same boat, there are scouts at all these games, and you know, you're a couple of weeks away from the major league draft, and everybody on the field has certain visions of what they want their career to be. What's it like to know that there are people in the stands who might have a little say in your future? What do you and your teammates talk about in regards to that?
Well, for me, on a personal level, it's very humbling. Just being wanted by these guys, I would say, or just being approached by these guys is probably some of the coolest experiences I've ever had. The very first start itself, I was so nervous. I've never seen that many cameras watch me throw a bullpen before a game. I figured it'd be during the game where I'd be focusing on the hitter, but this was simply before the game even started. And I think the guys around kind of just embraced the situation as well, and kind of we all kind of just learned from each other as to like how to handle the situations better, how we could maybe some certain things we could work on. And I do think in situations like this, it's just going, putting forth their best, because at the end of the day, all you want to be is a consistent pitcher at a very high level, and that's what I'm trying to prove here now. Yeah, there are sometimes there are bad days that happen, and there are days where you have to fight through that. But as long as you keep getting outs and keep doing your job, then the nerves start to go away quite quickly.
You're playing with a lot of people from all over right now, around the country, different parts of the country. So they didn't all go through the exact same thing, did they? You had two seasons canceled. You had two Ivy League seasons canceled. Not everybody's in the same boat, but as you're kind of getting back into the swing of things here and things are opening up more, I mean, you've already talked about maybe some of the benefits you have seen from not having to pitch in game action and being able to work on things to improve. Are you and your teammates just kind of really, have you even talked about the idea of just kind of getting back to normal and getting back into a season and in a flow?
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I do think that certain players on teams are starting to realize that while we are getting back to normal and wanting to play more, some people are starting to realize that, look, having the right training regimen can really change things. I think some people right now are having seasons, doing well, but guys around them know that they can be better. And I do think that when it comes to COVID, it was probably the biggest blessing of my life on the development aspect. It's been one of the craziest journeys I've had. But when it comes to coming back to normalcy, yeah, we are all looking forward to it. It is getting better and better month by month. Glad to see many people getting vaccinated. Hopefully the trend continues. But it's definitely nice to have a crowd too, regardless how big or small they're. It is around any game that we play. Just simply having a crowd and interacting with them has been so, so fun.
All right, so tell me a little bit about growing up in North Carolina and what your baseball experience was like there as a fan, as a player. You and I are separated by a generation, but we do have a similar background. First generation of our family born in the U.S. Parents are Indian immigrants. So what kind of role, tell me, what are your earliest memories about being a baseball fan and having that experience with you and your family growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was a little kid, I want to say when I was 3 or 4 years old, we tried out so many different sports. This was fun. I loved being active. My brother and I loved being active. And it would be basketball, soccer, baseball, sometimes tennis, sometimes golf. But baseball was my love since I was 4 years old. And it hasn't really stopped since. The passion for the game will never go away from me as long as I live. And I do think that I lived in a great community where we were able to like embrace the game and enjoy the game together. And I would say as a fan, I've been a fan of the Yankees, which I love. I will say that my brother and I idolized Derek Jeter at quite a young age. Watching him do his thing was simply a joy to watch. And we went to the old Yankee Stadium. That was the very first MLB stadium that we went to. So that made us even more of a fan.
Do you remember when that was?
Oh, that's a good question. I want to say 2010, give or take 1 or 2 years more or less. Mm-hmm. CC Sabathia was pitching at the time against the Texas Rangers. So it was actually a really, really good matchup. Back when the Rangers were a solid team with Josh Hamilton, Elvis Andrews, Adrian Beltre. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a very fun game to watch. And actually quite recently, my brother and my parents went to Tampa Bay versus Yankees game after they dropped me here in Mystic. So just going back to Yankee Stadium, going back just to watch these guys play. And now that both of us are just crazy baseball learners and wanting to learn about the game, watching these guys, we have a different perspective now. We have a different kind of respect. And I would say that simply just enjoying them has been awesome. Like, obviously it's been a struggle the last couple of years. A lot of frustrations have come about with the Yankees, but regardless, we're also just here to learn from other players, regardless like who we're a fan of. Learning guys from like DeGrom, Yu Darvish, Kyle Hendricks, Garrett Cole, obviously, and then we're just here to be learners now.
Your brother is still in high school.
So he is going to Middlebury this upcoming fall. He's going to play baseball there.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to seeing how his college journey goes. It's going to be a very very fun time.
So, you know, tell me a little bit about how you and your parents all felt about really this, you know, one, growing up loving baseball and kind of choosing this career path. Because, listen, I grew up in an era when the career path I chose as a broadcaster and following sports this way, it wasn't necessarily considered one of the traditional paths for children of Indian immigrants. It was mostly, you know, listen, the stereotypes are true for a reason, right? It was about being a doctor or being an engineer, computer science, things like that. How did you go about having this kind of love affair with baseball, growing into seeing it as a possible profession, and the type of support you received, not just from your parents, but maybe from extended family, people in the community who might not have been as familiar with how, you know, how possible it was to go do this?
You're right. These stereotypes still do come about these days. And I will say being an Indian American playing the game of baseball is a very rare thing as of late. And I'm very, very thankful to be a part of that small group at the moment. But I will say during high school, at least when I wanted to go to college, it was all about just making sure that we're disciplined. If we're like, that's the only thing my parents really care about. If you want to pursue it, be disciplined. And I feel like that's a very good message, regardless what career path you go into. So that obviously that process got me into college. And I would say we didn't really think of it as a profession until last year. I want to say late 2020. Because things were really starting to turn around when it comes to the development side of things. So earlier we would be trying to figure out internships and trying to figure out job opportunities. And yeah, while that work experience would be very good, I just wasn't good enough at baseball at the time. So keep being disciplined, obviously, having that set routine, my brother and I holding each other accountable, having the tread coaches, the DST coaches holding me accountable as well. They're learning as I'm learning. That's how it's been since the college process, because they went to college in India. So it's been a very cool learning experience for us to have together. And I do think it's been a blessing to have them be in my sort of bubble when it comes to the support system. And I will say, having family in India, you're still trying to teach them as well. They ask these sort of questions. They ask these sort of questions to try to explain it to them in the simplest way possible. And then you try to explain to them the draft as well. Like, they're so excited, but they want to understand. Yeah. And I do think that trying to keep in constant contact with them, trying to make sure they get it even more and more after each call is, something that it'd be really cool for them to learn. And maybe they can pass it on to other people, because I will say this, I really want to expand the game of baseball to India. And I wouldn't say like the whole $1 million arm win. Yeah. I want it to be like one of those fun experiences to where like a little league could be created of some sort. People from India can go, we can create a league in India to where people can go straight to the minors afterwards, or some sort of crazy thing that could happen. But I do think being an ambassador for the game around the world would be something that I would dream about doing. And I simply would not stop pursuing that until I feel like it's achieved, because it's definitely, if we can find 11 of the best guys in the world to play cricket, we can for sure find some baseball players.
I think, you know, that's kind of the idea behind $1 million arm anyway, and it's, you know, I'm kind of wondering where that fits into what you and your family, how you were kind of introduced to that, what you thought of it, what your family thinks of that when they see that. And maybe even family you have in India still, who that's their whole idea of baseball is watching $1 million arm. What do you remember about seeing it and sharing that experience with your family?
Watching the $1 million arm, it was kind of nice, because having some sort of connection with India and baseball was definitely something very cool to see. I will say this, $1 million arm did give a little bit of a bad portrayal of India, which I was not too happy about, but that's just a scenario of the movie. Mm-hmm. That's what started the connection. I feel like people kind of just walk around and say, you could be the $1 million arm, but I'm like, not so quite. It's a different situation, but not quite. It was definitely a start of a connection, I would say, which was something that was very cool. And looking back and doing a little bit of research on the two guys that were there throughout that process, I think it's something that that connection will never go away. So I think now that was the official start of it, and I want that bond of Major League Baseball, minor league baseball, and Indian, and just a community of Indian people to just stick forever.
You're a political science major with a minor in statistics and data science.
Correct.
So where were you going to go with that if, as you started this journey, if baseball wasn't going to be in your future, what were the aspirations with those courses of study?
Yeah, I've been very interested in cybersecurity as of late. I've been doing a lot of classes on international security, international relations, and I've been learning a lot of coding on the side as well. So in regards to the political science aspect, and I would say a little bit more of the analytical side, I would go on the cybersecurity. And this would be more of like an analyst at first and maybe proceed to expand as the coding tends to get better. But I will say on the statistics side, not really shying away from the game of baseball. I want to be in the front office. I think it would be really cool to do some sort of data analytics for an MLB organization. One of my best friends, his name is Quentin Clear. He's currently doing player development for the Philadelphia Phillies right now. He's taken a gap year and doing player development. So learning from guys like him too, who's already going through that sort of process. And I just want to be a part of an MLB organization and contribute in a big way.
Roland, I want to ask you maybe something of a larger social context question. I'm not sure that your experience might have been the same as mine growing up, you know, as I said, a generation apart. But I always, the one thing I found great about being a fan of baseball was it was something that proved to be very inclusive in a neighborhood growing up. When you might not feel like part of the larger group around you, and you have, a background that might make you feel like you're not part of the larger group, baseball becomes very inclusive. Did you have any sort of experience like that growing up?
For sure. I would say that baseball is one of the most diverse sports when it comes to players in the MLB organizations. China, Japan, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Venezuela. Simply putting Indian Americans in that aspect would just make it a more interesting team, I would say, when it comes to experiencing different cultures and different backgrounds. Because I do think it's very cool to have a very diverse team, kind of just learning from each other, understanding what they go through in comparison to what you yourself goes through. But yeah, I would say baseball is a very, very inclusive sport. I do think we have a lot of guys of different backgrounds at Yale, and I do think it just makes it more of a comfortable environment for everyone to really go out and do your thing.
As far as what you try to do off the field, and right now, clearly there's a very big focus on the field, and for good reason. Can you tell me what Kitab is?
Yes. So I started this in high school, my brother and I. It means book in Urdu, which is a native language in India. And essentially what it is we are collecting books from pretty much all around the world and giving it to underprivileged children in India. And I do think there's also an education aspect to this as well. People in India, a lot of great people have been working on this as well. Kind of just educating them on kind of like these books that are being given to them. They're all very thankful for the books, but obviously there's more that we can do. We have higher ambitions when it comes to this sort of project. And I do think with kind of the crazy COVID thing going on and obviously with baseball now, hopefully an off season comes very soon to where I'll start to take up the project even more. So I would say Kitab's been one of the coolest things I've done throughout my life, and we just got to keep doing. Just got to keep helping these children because they deserve more.
And this, how did you know, this is something you and your brother thought of on your own?
So we have a small connection in India who actually started this herself, and there was not a U.S. side of this, so no one was really collecting books in the United States. So my dad, my brother, and I thought it would be probably the best thing if we could do that, because with the amount of people that we know within the U.S., it would be really cool to see what kind of book drive we can hold. And we got books from Houston, Seattle, New Jersey, I want to say those are the we got those from other places, and obviously Charlotte as well. Yeah, so it was a phenomenal book draft. We also did a GoFundMe for these people. So this was quite cool.
All right, so people who are listening to this do not have a visual, so they can't see you. But I'm going to ask you to describe how this came about. Okay, even the scouts who I've talked to, they all say the same thing. You know, you have the Raleigh fingers, handlebar mustache working. How did that one come about? How'd you come up with that look?
Once COVID hit, well, before I even go into that, I can't grow facial hair. You know, it's a rule that's Stuper puts within the program, and I respect it. I did take advantage when I was not at Yale to grow some facial hair. When it comes to facial hair, I grew my biggest beard in eighth grade, which puts into perspective how quick and how early I started growing facial hair. So I knew this was a potential. It wasn't anything crazy I was thinking about, but it was a potential thing that could have happened. So I had three different phases of facial hair. First, I tried out the full beard, and I had a full head of hair at the time too. So this is like a completely new person to some people, and I love it. And then the second phase I went to, I shaved my head and had a royal beard with kind of like a really thick mustache. And I want to say as June 2020, I figured, I mean, it's possible. Might as well try it. So I went to a barber who specializes in handlebars because he himself used to have one. So I figured, is it long enough? And he's like, yes. And I'm like, shave off this beard and let's try this. So June of 2020, I had a handlebar for the first time. Wasn't even close to as long as this. I would say it was maybe to the lower portion of my mustache where it is right now, but it was definitely a start. And if I'm still going to be pitching, and if I'm not going to be at Yale, I'm going to keep this for as long as I can. I figured it'd be like a really cool marketing tool to use as well. I thought it was as of late, but more or less, it's just something different. I'm already different when it comes to Indian American playing baseball. Why not be different with the facial hair too? I love being unique in that aspect. But to be honest with you, Raleigh fingers did not really come to mind. It was just more of like, it would be really, really, really cool if I could do this. And luckily, it's been going on since for over a year now.
Did you know Raleigh fingers, or did you have to Google him?
I did know him. I just like I, it didn't even come to my mind that he had a handlebar as well.
Okay.
I will say the handlebar kind of like reminded me of like the Rajasthani princes back then in the day. Mm-hmm, I would read a lot of these comic books, and all of these kings and princes would have these handlebars, and they still do in the state of Rajasthan, but they're at a completely different level. But this is definitely something that I just really, really wanted to try. It grew in my parents. At first, they were like, shave that thing off right now. But I don't blame them. I don't blame them. They're like, this is crazy. How are you doing this? And then I kind of just kept on leaving. I just left it there, and they just it just grew on them. So, it's been like this ever since. So it's been really, really cool.
All right, you're not that far away from realizing a part of your dream. And 3 years ago, like you said, we've talked a little bit about the evolution of your pitching career the last few years and where you thought your dreams were going to be. I don't know if you imagined where you would, you know, that you would be this close, coming up to draft day and thinking about the potential here. What do you think draft day is going to be like for you?
I'm just going to be anxious. I'm just going to be very anxious and excited regardless of what happens. Because we don't know what's happening. Like this is, I've shown four starts. I've shown the development side of things as to what's going to happen. And July 11th through the 13th, we're just hoping for the best. We're just hoping for the right fit, the right opportunity at the right time. And I do think that I'm forever thankful for all these teams that have come and watched me in the past month. And I do think regardless which team gets me, just know that they're going to get a guy who's going to work his butt off and really, really try to make an impact very, very quickly throughout the minor league system and hopefully very soon in the major league system.
And have you carefully explained to your parents and your family that getting drafted means you leave school and you might have to come back and finish that part of it some other time?
Yes, yes. That is a conversation we've had to have a lot. I will say that the portion that we all liked was that the school gets to get paid for it. And Yale is a very prestigious school, but it's also quite an expensive school as well. And with my brother already going to Middlebury in the fall, it's going to be a little bit of a toll. So I figured that conversation would kind of stir about. Once I learned about it, I told him immediately. And that was something very cool that actually both of us did not know at the time. So once we got to learn that aspect, that school actually gets to get paid for. And that the mentality of go pursue your dreams, school can always be done later. That was something very reassuring to both of us.
My thanks to Rohan Honda, and best of luck to him and his family as they begin their journey into professional baseball after the coming first-year player draft. I know he's someone my family will be excited to follow along the way. Hey, if you're new here, please check out the 30 with Murdy archive at Odyssey and Apple Podcasts. You can check out recent conversations like the ones of Princeton head baseball coach Scott Bradley and former Pirates All-Star Dave Parker. Make sure to subscribe and review and all that jazz. Also, check out the WFAN Baseball Insiders podcast for your Yankees and Mets talk. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, I'm Sweeney Murdy.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.